I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Royal Blue Podcast. I'm Phil Kirkbride, and today, joined by Dave Prentice, Adam Jones, and Gav Buckland as Chew the Fat over all the major talking points at Goodison Park. And there's plenty to get our teeth stuck into ahead of a trip to Aston Villa tomorrow, 5:30 at Villa Park. The Blues on the road again. Can they maintain an unbeaten start under Rafa Benitez? Preno, a start that Rafa said almost perfect, but not quite. Talk to me about your feelings about the perception of Rafa now. He's been in the job since the end of June. Five games, four in the league, one in the cup. Yeah. A very good start. Do you sense a shift in feeling amongst supporters who were, there were obviously extremes. There were some people who were completely against him and some people were uncertain. Some people, of course, were content and satisfied. What do you sense is the feeling around Rafa as Everton's manager now?
I think it's still a little too early. I think the near-perfect start that he's made means that those that were always relatively positive or, you know, happy to be convinced have been a little bit more vocal in their support for him. But I think those naysayers, if you like, the negatives, have just been quiet, you know, so they haven't had anything to complain about because, as Rafa says, it's been a near-perfect start. And so I think they've been unable, you know, so to complain. They've just, you know, sort of kept the powder dry, if you like. And this weekend could be quite significant in that whole mindset thing. Because Villa, it's come to be the toughest game we've had so far. I mean, not suggesting for a second that Leeds away or Brighton are away are easy games, because they're not. They were tough tests as well, but we came through them. But Villa, just the way they've built upon their squad during the summer, how good they looked against Chelsea for large periods of that game. I mean, don't read anything into the 3-0 scoreline, because that just completely is not a reflection of how they played. They were much the best, certainly as good as Chelsea in the first half, missed some great chances and, you know, so could have scored, you know, a really surprise upset that game. So I think this weekend will really show us exactly, you know, so how far along we are and, you know, so the, I won't say revolution, I've just said it, the revolution, sorry. But, you know, so how far along we are, you know, so in his bid to change things. So I'm hoping things have changed because, you know, I've said all along on here that I thought it was a good, brave, but a good appointment. And he's already started to change things for the better. But to convince all of the fan base, I think we'll need to see some significant results against some of the bigger hitters in the league. And I know Villa aren't a big hitter, but they are a very, very difficult place to go. So it'll be interesting this weekend. You know, it'll be a tough game. It'll be a true test of maybe, you know, so how the fans are thinking. I mean, we still haven't had a song for him yet, have we? I think it could be some time yet before we see that. But, you know, it's good to hear that, you know, so the people who are being very, very vocal and positive about him are doing so, you know, so more increasingly now, which is good. And that just underlines, you know, so how good the start of the season has been.
Yeah, a really interesting game with Villa, because a side who no doubt have got similar aspirations as ourselves this season. Adam, what have you liked about what Rafa has done so far? And also, what have you still got questions over? And I appreciate it's still a small sample size, but give us an idea of what you liked and maybe what you're still uncertain about.
Well, it's been a very back-to-basics sort of approach, really, hasn't it? It's very much focused around not necessarily the quality of the players, almost, but it's more focused around the hard work that all of these players are going to put in, the determination, you know, direct, fast flow and attack and football. And, you know, that's the kind of thing that Everton fans have wanted to see for ages, isn't it? We didn't see it enough, especially towards the back end of Carlo Ancelotti's reign. That was, you know, far from what we were seeing, really, especially at Goodison Park. So to see that kind of, you know, back to basics sort of approach, you know, I think he's very straight talking in press conferences as well. And in terms of, you know, his squad, which are quite, I quite like to say, I mean, apart from when he's talking about James Rodriguez, I think he does become a bit more veiled when it comes to him. But aside from that, you know, I think he's just, he's just been very realistic, hasn't he, about his prospects so far this season. He just wants to improve this team, improve the squad. He's not making any massive promises over the course of this season. And I think that's probably where Everton found themselves this season, isn't it? After what was a disappointing end to the last term, finishing 10th. You know, I think it was just all about getting back to basics, back to a realistic sort of approach. I'd maybe like to see us not falling behind in home games in future. You know, I think these two home games, while they've been fantastic atmospheres in the second half, we've had nearly hour-long periods, essentially, haven't we, leading up to those sort of moments. So I'd maybe like to see the defence shored up a little bit more. And maybe that will be the case with the likes of Yerry Mina coming back to fitness, Ben Godfrey getting back fully to speed as well. Hopefully, we'll be able to have those kind of players fully fit for the majority of the season, at least. So it might make things a little bit easier there. So I think just defensively, perhaps Everton need to improve in that sense. But I think overall, Preno's absolutely right. I think Rafa's made a really, really promising start, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens against Villa, because as you say, that will be the biggest test so far.
Gav, I'm going to throw one of your excellent stats back at you that you delivered to me a couple of hours ago.
No,
this is a really interesting one. This is the one that jumped out at me. Yeah. If the Toffees win on Saturday, 13 points from 5 games, which you call Rafa Benitez's best start to a Premier League season, and equal Everton's record at the same stage last season.
It's last year, yeah.
So 13 points from 5 league games, there was a real, almost undeniable sense of excitement at that point last season under Carlo. What would the feeling be, do you sense, amongst Blues, you know, of your family, friends, if we were at that point come, what would it be, 7:30 on Saturday night?
I think a little bit more measured. I think last season, obviously, there was no crowds. That sort of let a bit of a artificial feel to it, as we all know, and we don't need to go there. I think Hammers coming in last year, you know, was a massive plus, and we got caught up in the euphoria, that type of stuff. So I think we were top of the league, weren't we? Obviously, the so-called big boys in the Premier League had failed to fire this year. I think it's a little bit more measured and a little bit more balanced, I think. Probably because of the lessons of last season. So I think, yeah, there's a lot more realism, isn't it? I think because we all know the crowds back and things getting back to normal, that the top teams in the league are going to be far more competitive and ruthless than what they were last season, which is about effectively what happens early, wasn't it? You only go see the point totals. So, yeah, more measured, but at the same time, a lot more room for optimism, I think, than what we thought at the start of the season. I wouldn't like to think that if we got beat on Saturday, there'd be a lot of people that started, you know, don't want Benitez or come out towards work and say, and I told you so. I don't think that's right, in the same way as that, if, you know, it gets a couple of wins, you say, oh, yeah, we told you so, it'd be a good appointment. Yeah. You know, I think there's a long period of time before you can pass judgment.
Go on then, Gav. I mean, I'm putting you on the spot here, sorry, as I always do. How long does he need before we obviously, the final judgment on Rafa Benitez's Everton tenure will ultimately come at the end, whenever that is. But at what point, how many games in do you think that we all should be able to go, right, we can say whether it's been good or bad start, or, you know, he's on the right path?
I suppose you've got to play everybody once, haven't you? I think, you know, I don't think we should be judged about how we play against the big six, to be fair. I saw Gary Neville on Monday saying, oh, Everton don't compete and bottle it and all that. Just don't have that at all, I'm afraid. The financial resource and the big six are trump everything else. When you look at the wage bills. So, but how, you know, that we're competitive. And, you know, that going back to what I was saying, I think he's done well so far, is quite obvious. He obviously works with the players far better than any other manager we've had since Moyes. You know, it's quite obvious on a one-to-one basis. Tactically, he's cute. He knows what he's doing. Every player, you get the impression, now knows what they're supposed to be doing when they go on the football pitch. The players are obviously fitter. than what they've looked previously for several years under Silva and Ancelotti in particular. And it's those basics that are right, that he's always going to bring that. The next test for me is where perhaps, you know, saying that there's Ben who's appointed, is he so much up on modern football and all that type of thing to be competitive against the better coaches? And that's when it's those are his big tests. But I've got no complaints so far. I think also as well, and you mentioned this as press conference, I think the fact that he knows the area and he knows Everton supporters, even though he managed to cross the park. And it's noticeable, is I'm convinced that's why he started off. We've been surprisingly offensive, haven't we, when we played. We played a lot more, attacking-wise, we played a lot more verve than what you would expect in, say, Newcastle. Because I think he knows that if he'd set up like he did at Newcastle, he would have immediately got off on the wrong foot with the supporters. You know, a flat 4-4-2, low block or whatever it's called, you know, all that type of stuff. The fact that he's injected pace, that he's shown a lot more ambition, I think that's also there to, you know, to sort of, you know, win the supporters' favour. I don't think that's a coincidence.
Yeah. Well, that's a really interesting point, Prenner, that Gav makes, because as it stands after four league games, we've had 25 shots on target, which is the third highest in the league. Last season, we 38 games, we only had 148 shots on target. So you can already see what Rafa's intention is. Do you think he's been so positive in the games that we've had so far? As Gav has kind of alluded to, very mindful of ultimately what did for us last season was when we came unstuck against sides that we should be beating, sides at home where we came unstuck. Really, is Rafa, as you alluded to at the start of the pod, he sees our season as almost being condensed how we get on against the teams around us and below us, maybe not the guys above us at this stage, because we haven't got the squad yet that he really wants.
Yeah, I mean, he's a very, very clever manager. And I was going to say, you know, apart from actually reading the room and realising that he had to introduce, you know, sort of fairly positive football, you know, high energy football right from the off, he also does it in quite an overt fashion. You know, you see him on the touchline trying to influence things. You know, you see him issuing instructions to players and, you know, walking over before the game and having a quiet word in Dominic Calvert-Lewin's ear before the first game against Southampton. You know, all the tactics, you know, surely have been, you know, organised and drummed into the players long before kickoff. So what message can you possibly be giving to somebody in the, you know, sort of seconds before kickoff? I think a lot of it is, you know, maybe playing to the gallery a little bit. And people like to see that. They like to see a manager that, you know, is hands-on and is actually trying to influence things. You know, so nobody wants to see a manager sat on his hands in the dugout or another one not getting particularly enthusiastic about results. That was something that was always like tossed Walter Smith's way. You know, so he never reacted positively or negatively. And that was used as a stick to beat him with. I mean, David Moyes was quite the opposite. He'd like, you know, sort of run up and down the touchline like a maniac, you know, so when we scored a big goal. And I think the fans really enjoyed that, you know, so, you know, certainly for the first, you know, sort of few years of his tenure. So, you know, so Rafa is very, very clever. You know, so he's good at, you know, sort of reading football supporters as well as reading players. So, you know, it was important to get that message across to the supporters. Look, we are trying to change things. This is what we're trying to do. This is what we're trying to affect. And so, you know, that has been quite, you know, sort of well received so far. So it's very, very early days. Like we said before, you know, it's only a handful of games. You know, there's a lot to do. And we've got to get results against, you know, some of the more difficult fixtures in the calendar. But equally, you know, he's working with a squad that's only had a handful of changes that he's been able to bring in at very, very well, next to nothing in terms of financial outlay. So his hands have been tied to a certain degree, but he's not complaining about it. He's getting on with it. And, you know, we're enjoying what we're seeing at the moment, but a long, long way to go yet. I mean, like I said earlier, Saturday tea time could be quite a significant fixture in the early part of this season.
And again, you know, as we keep saying, early days and stuff. But do you think maybe Rafa's looking at this squad, and effectively it is by and large the same squad that he had last season. Obviously Townsend and Gray have come in and made a difference, but by and large it is the same squad. Do you wonder if Rafa's looking at this squad going, how did you only finish 10th?
Probably. Yeah, and I think he wouldn't be the only one, would he? I think many managers in the past have had similar problems with, you know, this band of players. Essentially, the problem that we've had over the last few years throughout the season is consistency, isn't it? We just can't seem to hit the right balance throughout the season, and that's always come back to bite us, even when it looked like Carlo Ancelotti might have stumbled upon it, you know, away from home. Suddenly the home form drops off and we just can't find a middle ground that is able to get us into, you know, the European places where we really should have been getting with this quality of squad. So but it is just a problem that's plagued us throughout the last few years, really. Even under Marco Silva, we had some really talented players, but we just couldn't seem to knit it together on a consistent basis. So, you know, perhaps Rafa Benitez is probably looking at it, you know, perhaps through the lens of a new manager bounce, let's say, and he's thinking, well, what's been the problem with this squad then? They're really putting in the effort for me. Well, I mean, that's where it comes in, that we're all just saying, right, it's early days. We do need to get into the real nitty gritty of the season. And that's when this squad in the past has usually shown a little bit of the different side to themselves and maybe dropped off in certain areas and, you know, let things slip. And, you know, that's where the problems have started from that point on until the end of a campaign. If Rafa Benitez can avoid that happening this season, then I think that's probably going to be the best thing for him. If he can just find any sort of modicum of consistency, essentially, then I think this squad will have the quality to carry themselves through to, well, at least better than a 10th place finish, if not, you know, hopefully getting into those European places towards the end of the season. I think it's never been really an issue about the quality of this squad, because we know, like, on their day, there's a lot of players in this squad who are really, really fantastic footballers. But how often does their day come up? That's been the issue that we've had over the last couple of seasons. And we've seen perhaps the signs of that changing under Benitez. We've already mentioned the likes of Iwobi and Gomez over the last couple of weeks, haven't we? You've looked to be, you know, fitter, sharper, showing a little bit more than they have under recent managers, at least. So perhaps we're starting to see the green shoots of change under Benitez. But I think, as the lads have said, it's a little bit too early to tell on that front just quite yet. We'll have to see how that transpires for the rest of the season, I think.
As you were just talking there and talking about players, you know, inconsistent, I was just thinking, God, wouldn't Kevin Morales fit perfectly into this squad? Made for this current Everton setup. But, Gav, speaking of players that Rafa has inherited, and a player that has really made a storming start to the season, and we probably haven't spoken about him enough, how impressed have you been with this new attack-minded Abdoulaye Doucouré?
Very impressed. I think he's played like what we expected when he came from Watford, hasn't he, really, rather than the restrained figure that we had last season. that may have heard me during the game on Monday. I think he let a few passes go astray in the first half, and I said, you know, his passes not as good as what it should be, and he produces that. That, you know, Kevin De Bruyne type effort in the second half, doesn't he? You know, very impressed. I mean, and it was quite obvious from the first game. You know, he played well last season, didn't he? I mean, there was a couple of games he was maybe not as good as what he should be, but really impressed. But this is what we expected from him, didn't he? That's why we paid the fee. Get up and down. He's got a goal in him. Energetic. Has he got three assists this season? Something like that already.
Yeah.
Well, he was given the assist for Townsend's Thunderbolt, wasn't he?
yeah.
A little bit generous.
You all count, Brenno. You all count.
Yeah. As you know, I don't really like talking about round about assists unless you try to prove a point. I can't say anything more. The statistics tell their own tale, don't they? He's had, I was reading something today, isn't he? He's marginally. Needs a couple more games as coronated, matches his total shots output for the whole of last season or something. Yeah, he's been excellent, and he goes back to what Rafa is obviously, Benitez has seen that as one of the ways improving the team, improving the attack and ambition of the team is by getting them to play far more up the pitch than what he has been last season. And we've got the you know, we've had the rewards. Not only that, but he's got off the pitch quickly. I mean, he can motor, can't he? Takore. Yeah. I mean, it's been great. I mean, one, some of the highlights of the season so far for me is where we've had Takore, Gray, Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison all running at pace towards the opposition goal. No, it's been wonderful to see. We've not had that for donkey's years, if at all. And it's no coincidence we ran up some of the goals and shots on target and stuff with that role that he's playing. That said, though, it goes back to, I think, Adam's point about defences is we're maybe a little bit more open at the back. If you know, that's where you need a natural holder midfield and not Alan, who's been excellent, perhaps. But yeah, being great to Corey, this is the player that we want, we're expecting to get. He's played a couple of games against us for Watford where he's produced those type of performances, hasn't he? I think the 2-2 draw was at December 18. He ran riot in the midfield, didn't he? I think he scored. I couldn't cope with him. Yeah, tremendous. Long may continue in this role. We're getting the best out of him. That's what you want out of a player that you paid, whatever it was, 25 million quid or whatever it was, 20. Oh, brilliant. Yeah, excellent. And but it'd be interesting to see his role against the better teams, though, Phil, going back to, the top six.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And it'd be interesting to see how Benitez sets up against the best teams in the league. That would really be more pragmatic, Rafa.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
I'll kick that one on to you then, Preno. You know, you've watched more Rafa teams, if you like, up close and personal than many of us have. What would your hunch be when we go into those games against the established sides who are challenging for the title and really pushing for the Champions League? You know, will he be ultra pragmatic? Is he, you know, as I said before, is he seeing opportunities now to get points on the board against teams below us or nearer rivals, that when we go into these other games, it isn't quite as much as you know, we're not going into the final game of the season, going to the Etihad and looking for a win, basically, that type of situation.
He'll park the bus. I'm sure he will. I mean, if he can play three at the back to nullify Burnley's threat in a home game, I think he'll certainly go to Manchester United in a couple of weeks' time and be ultra pragmatic. I mean, I don't think anybody will be particularly upset by that because I think we accept that we're not really in a position in terms of quality of squad at the moment to be going to places like that and trying to be, you know, so particularly offensive and wide open. I think what was interesting talking about the Koure change of emphasis, I mean, you could argue that he has been wasted, you know, over the last couple of seasons being played in, as a holding midfielder when he clearly has all those elements to his game, those attacking elements. I just think there's been a shift in emphasis throughout the way the team's being set up. I think Rafa wants, you know, his wide players, his midfield players, to be going forward and to being, you know, sort of more attack-minded. But in turn, I think that places a little bit more onus on the back four or the back five, as it is or was on Monday, to be a little bit more cautious and maybe not quite as offensive as we have been in the past. Because we're used to seeing, you know, Seamus Coleman and Lucas Digne go bombing forward and being largely, you know, sort of our major supply of goals and assists. I mean, Lucas Digne, I've seen him getting a bit of flack recently for, you know, so starting the season slowly, which I don't take. I think he's played well, but I think maybe he's being asked to not get forward as often as he would do previously because you'd see him overlapping, you know, a dozen times a game, maybe, you know, so, you know, in previous eras, and you don't see it as much at the moment. And I wonder if that is because that is DeMar Gray's responsibility, that is Andros Townsend's responsibility, that are the central midfielders' responsibility. They've got to get up and support the strikers, you know, so rather than the fullbacks. So, you know, whilst Decore is benefiting from this, maybe, you know, so the players behind him are having to be a little bit more restrained as a result.
And that shouldn't be a reason to criticise them. I think it's just a methodology that he's been asked to, you know, sort of play a slightly different role. And if the end product is victories and results, which we're getting at the moment, fine, everyone's happy.
Absolutely. Okay, moving on to another topic for this week's pod. News, Adam, about new stadium investment. Liverpool City Region Combined Authority are proposing to inject £45 million into the Everton new stadium project, £15 million grant, £30 million loan for works linked to the stadium. Now, obviously, Councillor Steve Rotherham stressing this is not an investment in the football club, but the project and obviously the knock-on effects. Good news, though, of course, because £45 million, you know, that just nibble away nicely into the £500-plus million costs, doesn't it?
Yeah, I was going to say, Farhad Moshiri will be absolutely made up with that, won't he? Save himself a bit of cash in the future. Yeah, I mean, like, I think it's every little helps in terms of the stadium project, isn't it? It's nice to have these kinds of updates on it. You know, we're seeing, you know, little sporadic updates here and there on social media of people taking pictures down at Bramley Moor, and, you know, having little updates like this just gives you that, like, nice little reminder that it's still happening almost, and, you know, that nice little boost that while they're infilling the dock, there's still, you know, the funding model is still getting worked on, and it's looking like it's closer to completion now, and it is really promising to see stuff like that. And to be honest, it's really promising to see loads of Liverpool fans fuming on social media as well about it, because they quite clearly don't really understand what's going on. They do think it's some sort of investment in the club. And as you quite rightly say, Steve Rotherham's very vehemently come out and said that it's not that. It's an investment in the project instead, which is, you know, a very different sort of matter. And, you know, I just think it's really promising all around, isn't it? It's really good news. And, you know, hopefully it can take us forward into the future.
Well, by the time people listen to this podcast, the news will have emerged. Everton sort of released a special podcast this afternoon, and in it, many little bits of fascinating information about what's gone on. But contained in that is confirmation that, Gav, in the early part of October, the actual infilling of the dock will start, which is quite a significant milestone in the project, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Things are moving on, aren't they? I think I can only, every time this comes up when we're on pods, Preno and I will always say the presentation you went a couple of years ago, you know, at the Liver Builds that the club did for the Everton Heritage Society members, you seriously underestimate the work involved in this. You know, it's unbelievable. You know, the amount of work that the club has had to do, and the attention to detail is fantastic. And I was thinking about that last night when you were saying about £30 million loan, isn't it, £15 million grant? And grant, you know, yes. It was acknowledged that Everton is spending to £55 million on the preserving
heritage,
and maintaining the heritage of the area. And what the club has done and the plans has got to do that, you can see why it's costing a lot of money, because, you know, they're doing an amazing amount of work. So, going back to your point, that's great that, you know, filling in the dock. And I think it's also great news for the area about the funding as well. I mean, as was said, like, the £30 million loan will generate interest that will help the city, and it's not just money, get on with it. Everton have to do their part, don't they, in terms of who they employ. Absolutely. I think there's initiatives around health in the north part of the city, promoting good health, or all that type of, you know, good stuff that, you know, any community-minded club should be doing. So it's not just a question of giving money and saying just get on with it. There's certain responsibilities on Everton to also, you know, play a part in terms of development of the wider area. And that's good news as a resident of the city and not an Everton fan. And to be fair, a couple of Liverpool fans I've spoken to and seen, I've sort of can understand that, you know, rather than being, you know, eyes raised. When you look into the detail, you can see, you know, Steve Rotherham's message is spot on.
Yeah, Yeah, sometimes we fall foul of believing that extreme reactions on social media are sort of a natural gauge of actually the feeling and understanding of an issue. But Preno, I was having a conversation earlier with somebody about the stadium, and in modern football we become quite blasé about huge sums of money and 50 million here, 30 million here. But the fact that the club are investing £100 million in simply preparing the site, infilling the dock, dredging it, all this sort of thing. I mean, that is when you sit back and think about it, that is an absolutely astounding commitment just to get the thing levelled and ready to build on, never mind spending the rest on actually building a new stadium.
It is, but that's what should give us confidence that, you know, so this project will be seen through to its conclusion now, because that is one hell of an amount of money to be, you know, sort of expended on preparatory work. And so they're not going to commit to that without, you know, sort of the big picture being in place entirely. I mean, £350 million worth of private investments being lined up, the piece that you wrote this morning, you know, sort of telling us about that. Obviously, you know, so the City Council, you know, sort of elements of that, you know, so is in addition to that's to do with the heritage aspect of the site. But yeah, just underlines that, you know, so why everything is on target as it always has been, pretty much from the word go. Just to echo what, you know, so Gavin said, that, you know, so thing that we went to at the Liver buildings a couple of years ago, the level of detail that was involved in that presentation then was phenomenal. It was like, you know, even to the paving, you know, stones and some of the walls they were looking to prepare, and, you know, so the removal of the wildlife, the fish from one dock into something else, every single element of it had been like sort of looked at in very, very meticulous, fine detail. And so, you know, it's been a very, very impressive project from start to finish. And this is just the latest element of it. You know, massive amount of money just to get the thing ready, but it's got to be done, you know, sort of, you know, sort of fill in the dock before anything else can take place. So it just heartens me more than anything. It doesn't fill me with fear, thinking, wow, this is a big risk, this is a big gamble that the club's taken. It fills me with confidence that this is a project that's like so well underway now and is, you know, so very close to, you know, so not being completed, but, you know, so to, you know, so well underway. You know, so absolutely, it makes me feel happy, it makes me feel confident.
Club also confirming this afternoon things of removal of marine life from the dock is process has started today. They have discovered some unexploded devices, but I'm told, don't panic, they were all duds, so no, there was no threat of an explosion down there or anything. But I mean, you know, Adam, and when we listened, we were on the call for the council's planning decision back in February now.
Yeah.
I mean, it was incredible the amount of detail. We're talking about, was it bats? Remind me, I can't remember the exact, you know, there's so much
bats in the hydraulic tower.
literally no stone, but no cobble, if you like, down there has been left unturned. It is actually astonishing the level of work that's going into this.
Yeah, it was mad, wasn't it? Like, I do remember that it was almost like a 90-minute, almost two-hour presentation, wasn't it, from Everton, just describing every little nook and cranny about Bramley Moor Dock and what they're going to do in the future and how they're going to preserve this and how they're going to restore that and where they're going to put the bats and all that kind of stuff. And then all the councillors just kind of just went, yeah. They didn't really have that much to say, did they? Like 10 minutes, they just went, yeah, that seemed fine by me. And it was all kind of done and dusted. But, you know, it does just show the amount of hard work and effort that's gone into this from everybody around the club and everybody who the club have brought in on this kind of project over the last, you know, however many years it is, like coming up to like 5 years or so, something like that now, isn't it? Like, since they first identified Bramley Moor Dock as the place that they wanted to go. And, you know, it's only with that hard work that it went through that process so smoothly, isn't it, really? Because they've went through so many consultation processes over the past couple of years. You know, I do sense there was, you know, a little bit of frustration from fans, you know, when they had to modify the designs a little bit and then send them back and have another consultation period. People were just a bit like, oh, what's going on here? Why are there so many consultation periods? But I think we're now starting to see the benefits of all that, aren't we? Because everything is running so smoothly. The club have, you know, turned over every leaf, as it were, in terms of even like the worst case scenarios of, you know, potentially pulling bombs out of the dock and everything like that. They're just taking all that kind of thing in their stride, taking fish out. You know, it's very run of the mill stuff to them. Like it over the year, over the coming weeks, and you know, that's only testament to the amount of hard work that's been put in over the last few years. So, you know, as Preno says, it's really, really, really exciting to see these kind of developments happening, and you know, it all seems to be going to plan, which is, you know, putting smiles on a lot of Everton fans' faces, I have to say.
It also underlines as well why it was so disappointing that UNESCO should cite Everton's stadium plans as the, you know, the final straw in, you know, taking away Liverpool's World Heritage Site status, because Everton have done more than any developer along the whole stretch of the waterfront to preserve and retain so much of the historical elements of a dock which was inaccessible to the public previously and will now be accessible. It's gone now. It's a completely different, you know, so I think we could fill a whole podcast on our own about that. But it just underlines, you know, so why UNESCO were wrong and why it was disappointing to cite and point the finger at Everton in the decision to, you know, take that World Heritage Site status away. If anything, they should have been praising Everton for the work they were doing to try and restore that part of the city.
Laughable, to be honest. Quite laughable, really. Okay, let's round off today's pod with the customary predictions time. I'll start with Gav again. Lucky man, Gav, if you can you can kick us off. Although we seem to have had a bit of a technical issue. So wait till Gav comes back. Ad, we'll start with you first. Aston Villa versus Everton, 5:30 p.m. at Villa Park. We will be there reporting on what?
I do really like Villa. As Preno pointed out before, I think they were really good against Chelsea. Didn't deserve to get beat 3-0, I don't think. They've got a lot of promising attacking players, especially. I think Danny Ings is dangerous. Ollie Watkins is dangerous. They'll have Buendia back. They'll have Emi Martinez back as well, which I think are two, you know, big boosts for them. So
hopefully jet lagged.
Well, fingers crossed. Yeah. Fingers crossed. But I'm gonna go similar to the Leeds game. I'm gonna go a 2-2 draw.
Okay. Preno?
You've stolen my thunder. I was gonna go for exactly that same scoreline, because this is the Royal Blue podcast, and you know, we're not allowed to predict defeats, despite you know, so some supporters. You know, so pulling us up for that same, we've got to try and be realistic. Well, we have got to be realistic, we've got to be optimistic as well. No, I think there are goals, you know, so from both, you know, so teams, you know, Villa have got a goal threat. We've been very, you know, so offensive and very bold, you know, so in recent games. It worries me a little bit that, you know, so Villa are a decent side, they've started the season well, but equally, it's not the kind of place where you should go, you know, feeling awestruck. You know, they're not Manchester City, you know, so they're not Chelsea. So, you know, there's an opportunity there to go and maybe get something. I think it's a little bit unrealistic to predict a victory, but, you know, if we did manage to go there and win, I wouldn't be wildly surprised. But I think, yeah, a draw. I think a 2-2 draw. We're not good enough defensively to keep them out. But equally, we have got enough threat, you know, so on the counter, especially with Demarai Gray breaking and Andros Townsend. Provided we can overcome the absence of Dominic Calvert-Lewin. I don't think we did on Monday night against Burnley. You know, so Richarlison didn't look like a centre-forward. And if we preserve or persevere with him as a centre-forward, I'm not so sure. Is Rondon ready to start a game? I don't know. But it's a long-winded way of saying I'm going to sit on the fence and say a 2-2 draw.
Gav, you know, is Villa's strength on the counter-attack? Do we just not be smart, sit back, soak up the pressure and hit them on the break? Is, you know, play them at their own game, so to speak?
Yeah, I think their fullbacks like to bomb on, don't they? Games I've seen, and I think if that's the case, then you keep you too wide, then off up top, don't you, and utilise the space that they've left. I can see us playing a very similar game to Leeds and Brighton. Sit deep early on, and I hate that phrase, grow into the game, but I'm just going to use it anyway. And do that, you know, because that's been successful for us so far, hasn't it, on our travels. Against teams that are not a million miles away from Villa, star-wise. And so I can see, you know, and I don't. I was debating whether to use this stat, but I will do. As you well know, Phil, as you know, Benitez has never lost at Villa Park.
Oh God!
you know what? That is like why you know people say. You know, never. You only ever mention bad stats when we get. But when you mention decent ones, you know, people say, "Oh, why have you mentioned that?" You know, I'll just say, Benitez has never, as a neutral, Benitez has never lost to Villa Park, and I fully expect that to continue tomorrow. I think we can win. I think we got us definitely got us in to win 2-0. I just don't want to repeat of, and this has brought back maybe some other people, the Friday night game of Villa a couple of years ago when we had the chance to go top. There's a similar vibe beforehand to this game. I know that was only after one or two games, wasn't it? Similar vibe this year to the tip, but I think we'll be a lot more competitive and organised than what we were, and one of the worst performances I can remember any Everton team over the last 5 or 10 years, and there's been enough of them. So 2-0 to Everton after all of that.
And Gav, of course, ladies and gentlemen, confidently predicting a victory despite telling me on this stats email that Danny Ings has scored 5 Premier League goals against Everton. The top is the only team Ings has scored against at all 3 of his previous Premier League clubs.
Ah, come on.
You see, so if you follow on from the Benitez stat, therefore, the Ings is not going to score tomorrow then, isn't it? Because if it's in, you know, so... Anyway,
Fingers crossed.
2-0 to the Mighty Blues off me. I'm feeling positive at the moment.
Lovely. I think I'll side with Adam and Prenner. I think we'll get something, but I think it'll probably be a draw. I think 1-1, I'll be in favour of Rondon starting. I think Richarlison looked a little bit... looked a little bit lost, didn't he? I appreciate it. It was physically very, very tough for him on Monday, and perhaps won't be quite as demanding on Saturday. But I think he's better with somebody up there and just playing off them, isn't he? But let's see, chaps. Thank you very much for your company. Lots covered there in today's pod. We'll be back next week, hopefully reporting on a 2-0 victory, as Gav hopes, from Villa Park. But no, chaps, thank you very much for your company, and thank you very much for listening. This has been the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.